I'm Tess Vigeland, host of Marketplace Money from APM. We turn now to our special election coverage here at Marketplace. We're calling it the real economy because the economy and how it affects you is, of course, the important narrative of this election year. I'm joined now by two of our intrepid reporters, Sarah Gardner and David Gura, to talk about their recent travels to Nebraska and Nevada. Welcome to you first, Sarah.
Hi, how are you?
And hi, David.
Hey, Tess.
You've both been reporting in two different states with, I think, pretty different experiences with the recession, with the housing bust. Sarah, let me start with you. How would you describe the mood in Las Vegas where you were?
Tess, I would say it was sober. Nevada is still in a bit of a hangover. And of course, they had the biggest boom and they fell the hardest. I think the mood is somewhat chastened, numb a little bit, and even still a little stunned at how hard they fell. And they're saying, you know, we're just going to have to claw our way back to prosperity.
David, you were in Nebraska, and I actually visited there 3 years ago just as the bust was happening, the financial crisis in October of 08. And at that time, they weren't hit. They had an unemployment rate, I think, of about 5%. Did the recession eventually come to Nebraska?
On to the good news.
Yeah.
There's this awareness in Nebraska that there's been a recession, that things have been pretty bad across the country. But in Nebraska itself, unemployment is still just around 4%.
Wow.
When you look at that list of foreclosures, Nebraska's right near the bottom. So there's this sense among everyone that I talk to that they feel pretty lucky. They feel like they've made it through this all right, and they've done pretty well so far.
All right, well, let's get to the details of all this. Sarah, let's go back to Las Vegas. And you met with some families there, and of course, not surprisingly, the big topic of conversation, the housing bust.
Right. I met a couple named James and Monique Leslie. They're in their 30s, two young children. They are renters, and a typical California couple who came to Nevada during the boom because of cheap housing and job opportunities. 2 years later, they had lost those jobs. They were related to housing and tourism. You know, they were at one time making $70,000. Now, I think $18,000 was the most they made last year. James, the husband, has been looking since July for a job. And here's James talking about that process.
I've had interviews here and there, but there's times where, you know, I'm sending my resume off literally to about 40 to 50 places and getting one response.
And response as in?
As in, you know, thank you for your application. We've decided to move elsewhere.
Tess, I think of them as being really stuck in Vegas. They can't find jobs elsewhere. And even if they could, they can't afford to move.
You mentioned that there were renters. And I know you also talked to some homeowners. And based on the statistics, probably a safe bet that they're underwater on their mortgage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could just run your finger down the white pages and find people,
right,
you know, in Las Vegas. I talked to Tom and Denise Wadeen. They're in their 40s. They bought a home in Enterprise, Nevada, just south of Las Vegas. They lost their small business, which, again, was related to the housing industry. Now their home is worth a third of their mortgage. Here's Tom talking about what's next.
Feeling sorry for yourself isn't going to help. You've just got to keep moving forward. We just talked about it this morning. You can't change anything unless you start. And so we're starting some different things. I'm looking in some different industries I might be able to work in, as well as going back to school and working towards getting my teaching degree.
Wow. Well, David, let's move back to the Cornhusker state. Was there much gambling there on the housing boom?
There wasn't. Home prices have stayed pretty stable. Land price, that's a different story. The price of farmland has gone up a lot over the last couple of years, and there's actually a good deal of fear that we might be seeing a bubble growing there. I talked to a real estate agent in Wayne, Nebraska. This is what I call a big town, 5,000 people, just northwest of Omaha. And Tricia told me that she thinks that there's something about Nebraskans that's helped them weather this crisis.
We are used to kind of getting by with just a little bit less. You know, we weren't going crazy with building. People were staying in their homes. They were trying to improve what they had. It was just a different type of lifestyle than what we were seeing elsewhere.
And Tricia told me she thinks there are two reasons for that. She said there isn't a whole lot of turnover in housing in Nebraska. You buy a house, you buy a farm, you're going to stay there for a while. It might even stay in your family for generations. And then she told me that if you bought a house, say, for $80,000 and, you know, over 6 months you made some repairs, you renovated it, and then you tried to sell it for, say, $180,000, that wouldn't fly. The neighbors would get suspicious. You know, they'd know something was up.
Wow. So no flipping there in Nebraska.
No, no.
Wow. I'm struck by your mentioning that farm property values were actually still going up. Why is agriculture in such good shape?
I mean, there's incredible demand. Everybody told me there's incredible demand for commodities like soy and corn. Corn prices, they're $6 or $7 a bushel, which didn't mean anything to me beforehand. But when you talk to a farmer and he's telling you he's, you know, he can get a couple hundred bushels of corn out of an acre of land and he's got 1,000 acres, it all adds up very quickly. I talked to Mike Van Cleef. He's the president and CEO of Citizens State Bank there. And I asked him sort of what farmers are doing when times are good. Are they investing? Are they saving? And this is what he had to say.
There's a saying out there that farmers are always paper rich and cash poor. You know, there's a lot of truth to that. I had a gentleman the other day. He came in and he paid off his operating line of credit, which for this example, and this is a true story, it was about a $275,000 line of credit. He paid it off.
Whoa!
That's not it. I mean, he still had $300,000 in his account. He put some of it in the CD, and the rest of it he put toward paying down more debt, and he invested in equipment and land.
Well, good for him. He's been listening to Marketplace Money. Sarah Gardner, David Gura, thanks so much for traveling and joining us to tell us about your travels.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.